Hey guys, it's your girl Carly Jones, and this is Makeup and Murder. Episode 2 of Makeup and Murder. Today I wanted to talk about the Fresali Rose Gold Skin Mist. This is a gift from God. No lie, no joke. I'm not just being funny. I'm dead serious. If you have really dry skin like myself, once you put on your makeup, once you do your foundation, your bronzer, concealer, all of that good stuff, you're going to want to spray this on top of that, and it will lock in everything and then just give you this dewy awesomeness. It is super amazing. Like I said, it's called Fresali and it is the Rose Gold Skin Mist. You can get this from Sephora, Sephora online, or you can probably get it from Fresali website as well. But you guys, if you have dry skin like me, you need this in your life. Now, without further ado, let's get into this case. Okay, so this case, I just want to start off by saying it is a documentary. They do have it on Netflix on the Unsolved Mysteries. But let me tell you a little backstory on this. So when I started to discuss me actually starting a podcast, I went online to GBI, which is the Georgia Bureau Investigation list for unsolved cases, unsolved homicides, things like that. And Patrice Andres was one of the women that I put on my list. And then lo and behold, a month later, boom, she's on this unsolved mystery documentary on Netflix. With that being said, I feel like there is a lot going on with this case. I feel like there's still more that needs to be discussed with this case. And it's been 16 years now. And I feel like the more and more we talk about it, the more the information will come out and eventually someone will fess up and what happened to her and who did it. So let's get started. So 38-year-old Patrice Andres. So Sheriff Ron Freeman was the detective on the case. Patrice also had friends come by the shop every afternoon, and one friend in specific was Ann McDonald, who became very close friends with Patrice and was there the night before she went missing. Now, if you haven't seen the documentary, she owned a salon in Cumming, Georgia. But that day on April 15th, 2004, Ann called Patrice's phone like she normally would, and it went straight to her voicemail. And of course, that seemed very odd to her. Police were called to the shop and noticed the cash register was open, but no money seemed to be missing. But her purse was still in the shop, and it also appeared that she might have been in the process of warming up her lunch for that day. The police found no blood, no prints, and no drag marks in or out of the salon building. Police had picked up her son Pistol from school and drove him to the shop, where they told him that his mother Patrice was missing. And of course, as any son would be, he was completely shocked and had no idea what was going on. Patrice was married at the time to a man named Rob Andres, and once he was contacted and was told the news, he told police he was at work and had no idea where she could be. What caught my eye was during the Unsolved Mystery interview, he was shaking. Now y'all, when I mean shaking, if y'all haven't seen it, he was shaking very badly, like something was up. And I'm sure that wasn't the, I wasn't the only one that seen that. Police started, or stated there was nothing suspicious looking at her salon or indicated a crime that had occurred. Only thing that was out of place was her vehicle that was normally parked at the end of the salon building, and that she had always backed her SUV in for her family and friends. But this time, her SUV was facing in the westward direction, almost halfway in front of the salon entrance door. And of course, there was a lot of accusations on who had moved it or why. A thorough search was conducted and no body was found, of course. They started asking questions. Was her marriage falling apart? Did she ever say anything about leaving at any point in time? During an interview, Pistol, which is Patrice's son, that his mother, Patrice, had asked him 2 weeks prior to disappearing, if he was ever to go anywhere, where would he go? And of course, he did not think anything would come of it because they talked about anything and everything and had a very close relationship with one another. Patrice had customers all morning before she disappeared. They noted the client's timeline. So 9 a.m. appointment came in and stated she was there, but she had seemed distracted and wasn't paying attention to her client. 11.05 a.m., first client leaves. At 11.10 a.m., the second client comes in for their appointment. At approximately 11.27 a.m., the second client leaves and stated that he received a call, and that was in fact verified by phone records per the investigation. At 11.35 a.m., rolls around, and a customer calls into the salon to change an appointment, and again, Patrice was there to answer that phone call as well. The client also mentioned that Patrice had been quite short during the phone conversation, and the client mentioned that it was not like Patrice to be so short on the phone. So that put another thought into the police and the investigators' heads, like, okay, were there any issues going on prior to her showing up to work before she disappeared? That call had only lasted about 2 minutes per investigators. The next phone call comes in at 11.50 a.m. Patrice does not answer this call. And that's when police and detectives start to think, okay, something is not right. That was only 13 minutes unaccounted for. What happened? So 11.37 a.m. and 11.50 a.m. What happened those 13 minutes? At 11.45 a.m., two separate witnesses drove by at two different times, say they noted Patrice's car, but it was now parked towards the front of the salon, not on the side where she would normally park, as we discussed in the beginning. The first witness stated she noticed a Chevy Lumina that was parked directly in front of the shop, and the door was open. She also stated she noticed the Chevy's Georgia license plate tag, which was the Georgia Quail Wildlife license plate. The second witness that drove by the shop at around the exact same time was a male, and he stated he thought the car to be a Ford Taurus, possibly a Malibu, with two ladies in the front of the vehicle who seemed tall in length with dark hair, standing in the center of the car near the passenger side, and in the front of the vehicle was an older lady. He believes to have seen a male, but then stated he noticed shoulder-length hair, which obviously that's not a male at that point, but I mean, who knows, it could be. The mystery to Patrice's disappearance seemed to have occurred in a 13-minute window from the time of the last phone call at 11.37 a.m. to 11.50 a.m. Pistol, her son, was only a couple months away from turning 16 at this time, I believe. Pistol said in an interview that he was about 8 or 9 when his mother, Patrice, had married her current husband, Rob Indres. Rob seemed to be a nice guy and a nice father figure to Pistol and would take him to his football practices and whatnot, but that had later changed. Per Pistol, quote, out of nowhere, Rob flipped the switch and started being rude and making crude comments towards him and even when his friends were over, unquote. They do not say anything else other than that about the crude comments, but I mean, come on, man, is that necessary? But they also believe that he could have had a jealous relationship or a jealous thought towards Pistol, but we'll get more into that later. Later in the interview, Pistol stated, quote, Rob became overly protective, starting hovering when he was around, unquote. I would call that jealousy, wouldn't you? Patrice's sister stated in that same interview that, quote, Rob and Patrice had fought all the time, unquote. But ironically enough, Rob would continue to say that wasn't true, quote, that they never argued and even stated it would drive divisions into relationships and said it was stupid by fighting. Well, what would you know, folks? Just doesn't make any sense. But then he also said that he believed that Pistol was jealous of Rob and Patrice's relationship. So you can see how that goes. But of course, the term of blaming Patrice for Pistol stating she let him run crazy with no discipline, which you never really know someone. I don't care how long you've known them. Remember that, people. To me, Pistol did not seem that type of child growing up, but again, speculation. Rob even had the nerve to say that he never seen a future in her son Pistol, but to a mother that is fighting words. I mean, I'm sitting here reading this and that just bothers me. Anywho, weeks prior, Patrice was talking to Pistol about a possible divorce with Rob, but everything that had been happening, I assume, with all the fighting and bickering and due to the fact that she had been unhappy, and of course, old Rob stated he had no recollection of her thinking about a possibility of divorce. Well, of course not. I mean, come on. Crazy enough, The day after Patrice went missing, Rob went and changed all the locks in the house that he and Patrice had been living in with Pistol. He wouldn't let him in the house, not even to get his clothes. Now, that's messed up. Rob had said, quote, it was precautionary measures, unquote. Pistol would bang on the door trying to get Rob's attention to come in and at least get his belongings, and Rob just completely ignored him. After that, Pistol then started living with his father, Don. Now, later on in this investigation, they zoomed in on two serial killers, Gary Hilton, who is known for killing a woman named Meredith Emerson, and Jeremy Jones, who killed 4 to 11 women total, ranging from 16 to 44 in age. Jeremy Jones operated in Kansas, Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana. What led them to suspect Hilton was because he had been seen in the county and mentioned seeing a woman in a hair shop, which they automatically thought of Patrice. And with his rap sheet, they couldn't rule him out. Jeremy Jones, however, was convicted of multiple murders, as mentioned a moment ago. And when he started talking, he told police he needed to tell them about a hairdresser in Georgia, which led them to Patrice again. Keep in mind, all these murders committed by these two killers were done around the time Patrice went missing. Jones was brought up as well because one of the states he operated in had included Georgia, and at that time in 2004, he had not been arrested, which is when Patrice went missing, and since then in 2005, Jeremy Jones was convicted and is now on death row. Gary Hilton, he apparently murdered and beheaded 4 hikers in Florida, North Carolina, and Georgia between 2005 and 2008. And since then, in 2008, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison in Georgia for the death of a young girl who resided in Beaufort, Georgia. And later, after more evidence rose to the surface in April 2011, then received the Florida death sentence for the murder of a 46-year-old. And oh my God. Then was sentenced to 2 years later in 2013 in North Carolina for more murders. I mean, damn, this man was hella busy. I don't want to get too much into these serial killers because I may do additional episodes on them. Maybe. What you guys think? Yay or nay? But as you can tell, they were definitely worth mentioning. Now let's move on. Jeremy Jones had told detectives while in custody, admitting to his murders in Mobile, Alabama, that he needed to tell them about a hairdresser in Georgia. Woo! Red flag. So they immediately contacted GBI. He told detectives that he had met Patrice at her shop. Then investigators then asked if he abducted Patrice, and he answered yes again. He then said, quote, when he is high on dope, he has no integrity, unquote. Well, that's nice, Jeremy. Well, okay then. Good to know. This guy is a hot freaking mess as well. He then went on, called himself Heckle and Jekyll. Now, come on. He then began to tell them what he was driving by the shop or why he was driving by the shop, decided to stop by and proceeded to walk in and seen Patrice and asked if she could help him jump his car. He told detectives that he had a knife and stabbed her. He proceeded to tell investigators that he threw her body in the Sweetwater Creek in Douglas County. And of course, they do an extensive search of the area with cadaver dogs and unfortunately come up empty-handed. Later on, Jeremy Jones recanted his confession and was ultimately back to square one. Ugh, don't you just hate that? You put all that effort in, tell them what's going on, tell them what you did, if you did it, and then, oh, wait, no, I didn't do it. Don't you hate that? So to this day, no evidence was found that led Jeremy Jones or Gary Hilton to killing Patrice Endres, but that doesn't mean they are eliminated as being a potential suspect. But they still continue to keep Jeremy Jones' name to the side, which, in my opinion, someone who knew that much about a specific person, like the fact of her name, where she worked, knowing that she was missing and dead, I believe they are still keeping a very close eye on this dude. What you guys think? Now, in December, on the 6th of 2005, 20 months after Patrice disappeared in Dawson County, Georgia, church member of Lebanon Baptist Church of Kelly Bridge Road, 6 miles from Patrice's salon, a man eating breakfast biscuit, they quoted that, on the back porch with a friend at Lebanon Church, notices a bunch of buzzards down into the woods behind the church. Once they finished eating, they walked down to where the buzzards were gathered and at first said they had found a deer and quickly noticed they had found a skull. You guys, it was 600 days from April 15th, 2004 to December 6th, 2005. The investigators had multiple people out searching all through those woods to find any evidence they could obtain to find out what happened to Patrice. They stated that the particular area that the church is located on is very rural and very remote. It seems it would have been difficult to be carrying a dead body that far into the woods, but they couldn't determine if she had walked into the woods, was carried, or was drug out there. The body has 206 bones in the body and had only found half of that, per the head investigator on the case. He also stated Patrice could have been lying dead in those woods behind the church for those 600 days. Once her remains were found and more talk started to arise, both Patrice's son Pistol and friends of Patrice started pointing fingers at the husband, Rob. Go figure. Because of what had been discussed earlier, the fighting, the arguing, and of course the talk of divorce. It was a 45-minute drive from Rob's job to Patrice's salon, but he was thoroughly investigated and a timeline was created that doesn't eliminate him, but it reduces it. Now, to me, from the outside looking into this case, he could have hired someone to kill Patrice. That is pure speculation on my part. Now, what gets me is Rob is doing this interview, you guys, and he is shaking, as I said earlier, and he's coming up with these scenarios like it had to have been someone who knew her, quote, that could have possibly been more than one person, or that she could have been someone's play toy, unquote. What the hell? The next suggestion was, oh, maybe she was wheeled out there in a wheelbarrow. Who knows? Wow. To this day, they are trying to find out more information on that blue vehicle that was parked outside her salon at approximately 11:45 a.m. on April 15th, 2004. And the fact that they've never found her wedding ring, which was a half-carat pear-shaped diamond with two other 14-carat rings that were attached. And of course, the investigation said themselves that there is additional information about this case they refuse to disclose because they define it as a guilty knowledge information, which means that information that is only known by the person responsible for killing Patrice and, of course, the investigators that know everything about the case and apparently to give the family some type of closure, which I totally get. Now listen, towards the end of the interview with husband Rob, wow, just listen. He asked the people responsible for her remains at the time of the funeral / viewing, he asked them to reassemble her, quote, lay her out for me, unquote, is the words he used. He stated, quote, I want to see her one last time, unquote. Keep in mind, they did not have all 206 bones in her body. I mean, maybe it's normal and it was just the words he used. I don't know, but it freaked me the heck out. Then once her bones / remains were laid out, he picked up her skull and carried it around for a while walking around the funeral home, mind you. Is that normal? Do people actually do that? Not only that, but once everything was done, they had her cremated and the ashes went to none other than, you guessed it, Rob. Not Pistol, but Rob. Then we find out that even after years had passed, this man sleeps in his bed with the box of her ashes every night. He said, quote, she was his teddy bear and it brought back good memories, unquote. What? You guys, I'm all for keeping the memories alive of your loved ones, but come on, that is a little creepy. It has been 16 years since Patrice disappeared and still no leads that we know of on the person who murdered her. Okay, so I have a little bit more of information. So most of this is speculation at this point, but one thing. So Rob was ex-Special Forces. It could have been a cop, it could have been a detective, what have you, but he was known to be very smart. Now, as I was doing a little bit more research, I did find this video on YouTube that talked about a post from Rob's son's wife. I don't know her name. Her name was blocked out. I couldn't tell what her name was or anything. All I'd seen was Indris. But it really caught my eye and it got me thinking. So the couple of the key points is that he was an ex-Special Forces. She said he was extremely smart and manipulative and a narcissist. Go figure. Was very possessive over his son's mother and stated that he possibly lied on the episode. He said that in the episode, he said he didn't have life insurance on her, so there was no reason for him to kill her. But as I'm reading this, it says that he did have life insurance on her, that he did have life insurance on Patrice and kept it, I mean, kept every penny of it, of course. I mean, he's not going to say that he didn't elsewhere otherwise. But locks were actually changed the day Patrice went missing. Now that is pure speculation. All this is, I just wanted to read you this, comment that I had found on YouTube which, like I said, it could be true, it could not be true. I don't know. I'll leave the questions up to you guys. But again, it's been 16 years. Nothing has been done. Nothing else has been said. But I feel like deep down in my gut, something's going to come up. With the docuseries coming out and people talking more and more and more, I don't know, you guys. I feel like something is going to come up, and something is going to come up about her husband. I don't know how or why I know this, but I don't know. I feel deep down inside. Anyway, if you have any information about Patrice Indra's case, of course, contact the Georgia Bureau of Investigation tip line, 1-800-597-8477, or you can go to theunsolved.com with any tips you may have. And that's it. That's a wrap for episode 2. So glad you guys joined in with me. Let's get the conversation started. See you on social media. Bye. Thank you guys so much for tuning into episode 2 of Makeup and Murder. I just want to say a quick thank you to all the ones who are commenting and sharing and sending me cute little messages, letting me know that you guys have enjoyed the episode and that you can't wait for episode 2. Ta-da! But yeah, if you listen to me on Apple Podcasts, don't forget to subscribe so you know when I upload my next video, and write a review and comment. I would greatly appreciate it. And yeah, you guys stay safe. Don't get in car with strangers. Make sure they're not videoing you behind your back. All this good stuff. Stay safe. Bye.